Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here this morning. And my name is Catherine Weaver, and I'm representing the Wake Forest School of Medicine and the Comprehensive Cancer Center of Wake Forest University. And I'm going to talk about a slightly different approach for managing surveillance of patient-reported outcomes using a national large data set called the National Health Interview Survey. Quick show of hands, how many people in here are familiar with NHIS? Okay, excellent. But I'll give a little reminder as well. So I have no disclosures to report. So what I want to cover in my brief time with you is, first of all, what is the National Health Interview Survey? What are some examples of cancer-relevant data that's available on the NHIS? What geographical data is available on the NHS? I wanted to take advantage of our theme for the conference and talk about using geographical data, and then I'm going to provide some examples about how the NHIS has been used to advance cancer health outcomes research, and particularly I'm going to show some examples talking about geographic health disparities. So the National Health Interview Survey is an annual in-person survey. It's run by the National Center for Health Statistics out of the CDC, and it's a very large survey that's conducted annually, 30 to 40,000 U.S. households each year. And it is conducted by many of the same individuals who run the census, trained interviewers, and a very important distinction from the NHIS from other large population surveillance sets is that it is done in person. And it's not a phone survey like BRFSS, it's not a mailed survey, it's an in-person survey. It involves a very complex survey design, like all nationally representative surveys are, clustering, stratification, multi-stage sampling. Basically, what this means for you in analyzing the data, it cannot be treated as a simple random sample. There's a complex weighting scheme involved in it, so you need to make sure you know what you're doing when you analyze the data. an advantage is it oversamples many, several ethnic minority groups, and so I think it has been used very effectively to look at disparities at the population level. It also, I think because it's an in-person survey, has historically had a very high response rate, and I've seen it dropping a tiny bit over time, but we still have a pretty robust response to this survey, exceeding, you know, typically around 70%. The core questions also do not vary from year to year, so NHIS is an excellent platform to look at longitudinal trends, and it's very important to distinguish. The survey is fielded every year, but it is cross-sectional samples year to year. The same people are not surveyed year to year. So you don't have longitudinal data at the patient level, but you do have longitudinal data at the population level across time, and it's a very effective platform for looking at longitudinal trends. And I've given you the link, so I really encourage you to look more closely at this survey. They have a very nice infrastructure online. You can look at this survey questionnaire for each year. You can also look at the documentation. So it's fairly user-friendly in terms of finding what's available. So in terms of what cancer-specific data is available on the NHIS, it's fairly limited in the core survey, but I think we've been able to utilize it to its fullest extent. All sample adults are asked about the history of cancer, so it's self-reported data on cancer history, not from a cancer registry, important to distinguish, but several studies have looked at the validity of self-reported information about cancer diagnosis and have found that it's fairly reliable, that people generally don't report cancer history if they don't in fact have cancer. And so everyone's asked about, all adults are asked about the type of cancer and then the year of diagnosis. And I'll say the type is a little bit more challenging. In my own research, I've had the greatest difficulty with skin cancers and people reporting those. So I think you have to understand what you're getting. And then approximately every 5 years thus far and hopefully into the future.
Power goes out.
Well, I can see my slides.
Interesting, isn't it?
Did I?
You just looked to see if there's a plug that's unplugged. You didn't leave
anything happening.
Was everybody?
I wonder if it's just the projector.
The projector?
There's a surge protector under here, but I'm afraid to touch it.
And I'm going to try to talk loud, but I'm going to rely on everyone in the back row. If you can't hear me, please let me know, and I'll try to talk louder. So every 5 years up to now, and hopefully into the future, the NCI has worked with partners to field a specific cancer module on the NHIS. And so year to year, the National Center for Health Statistics allows organizations that are interested to field additional questions. And so NCI, this is part of the NCI screening surveillance system. It's where those national data come about the uptake of cancer screening practices come. And so NCI has included additional cancer content. This is not every year, but it's approximately every 5 years. And so that's really a rich source of additional cancer-related data on the survey. So what's in the core that is of interest to patient-reported outcomes? So there's a lot of data about health status, including self-reported health, health limitations, and there's data on activities of daily living, ADLs, and then the instrumental ADLs. So the ADLs are like bathing, feeding, dressing, and then the IADLs are, you know, paying bills, social activities, that sort of thing. Those are fielded every year. Again, I'm talking about core content fielded every year right now. There's also information on health utility, which has been used by colleagues in the audience, and disability, work status, and productivity. There's also a measure called the Kessler K6, which measures psychological distress. It's a well-validated tool to screen for psychological distress. That's fielded every year as well. And then finally, there's pretty extensive data on medical conditions, comorbidities, and symptoms. And I think one really important thing to keep in mind when you're thinking about the NHIS and using it appropriately is that it is designed to measure the health, broadly speaking, of the U.S. population. So there's a tremendous amount of breadth in what is available in this survey. There is not a lot of depth. So for any one particular area you're interested in, it's not going to go perhaps as deep as you want it, but there will be a broad array of content available. There's also extensive data on health utilization, which, again, has been used by many colleagues, including and myself. So they ask about use of various medical services. They ask about, do you have a medical home? And then barriers to accessing care. And one variable we've used quite a lot is the financial barriers to utilization. So they ask, have you not gotten care that you needed in the past 12 months because of concerns about cost? So that's a really nice variable to look at as well. And then health insurance. So again, all of the estimates about health insurance coverage in the U.S. that you see that come out, I think, quarterly, those are coming from NHIS. So in 2010, the NCI sponsored a cancer module, and the really exciting opportunity in 2010 is that I was part of a working group while I was at the NCI to develop a cancer survivorship component to that 2010 NHIS module. And so we asked additional content that was particularly relevant to cancer survivors in that 2010 year. And so we asked about we included the PROMIS Global 10 measure, and you've heard about that, but that breaks into the mental health component and the physical health component scores. We asked about the financial impact of cancer from patients' perspectives. We asked about receipt of and satisfaction with psychosocial care. So we asked, were you screened for psychological distress, and how satisfied were you? We asked about participation in clinical trials. And then we asked about fear of recurrence, which you will not see on very many surveillance type measures, but is a really important variable for cancer survivors, as probably everyone in this room knows. And then I'd also ask about lots of risk factors generally for cancer. So we've got information about diet and nutrition, physical activity, sun avoidance. Certainly smoking is well covered every year in the survey. And then also cancer screening. And so NHIS is a nice platform as well for looking at cancer screening or surveillance behaviors in cancer survivors. So the next slide is really data heavy, so I'm going to do my best to tell you what it looks like. But I wanted to show you what the sampling population looks like when you pull cancer survivors out of the NHIS, because this is probably one of your questions, is what does the sample look like? So in 2010, we identified 1,800 cancer survivors in the NHIS, and a comparison sample of nearly 25,000 adults who did not have a history of cancer. I'll tell you, in my methodology, I exclude that small number of individuals who have a non-melanoma skin cancer, and then some people who it was sort of unclear whether or not they had cancer. I just kind of take them out, and I didn't put them in one population or the other. So, fortunately, I've looked pretty extensively at the population of cancer survivors we get from NHIS, and they're very representative of the overall population of U.S. cancer survivors. With respect to age at diagnosis, we get almost 55% of our cancer survivors in NHIS are over 65 years of age. We know that is pretty representative. With regards to racial and ethnic diversity, it's fairly representative of, the population of U.S. cancer survivors. One really interesting thing, too, is sort of looking that we were interested in was comorbidities. So what we found was that 48% of our cancer survivors in NHIS had two or more non-cancer comorbidities, which, again, is probably reflective but concerning to those of us who know how much of an impact comorbidities can have. So what do the cancer characteristics look like of these 1,800 individuals that we found? Well, the most common cancer types that you would expect are represented there. Nearly 20% were women with breast cancer, 15% prostate, 10% melanoma, and then also we had fairly high numbers of cervical cancer, colorectal. We had a good number of hematologic malignancies. And the one group that you will see underrepresented in this type of population surveillance survey is the short survival cancers, for reasons that we understand. If people don't live very long after their cancer diagnosis, they're less likely to be sampled in the population of overall cancer survivors. So only about 5.6, and I used the methodology developed by Dr. Yabroff to classify these as short survival cancers, which include the pancreatic cancers, the lung cancers. In contrast to some of the things, some of the other methodologies you've seen today, NHIS is best characterized as long-term cancer survivors because, again, we're talking about the population of U.S. cancer survivors. So over half of the survivors that you will find in NHIS have been diagnosed for more than 6 years. So these are folks who are fairly long after treatment. When we asked about questions about treatment and then recurrence in the 2010 NHS Cancer Survivor Module, and we observed that about 12% of the survivors told us that they had a recurrence, and that very few of them were in active treatment. Only about 6% are in active treatment. So this really contrasts to the first approach we heard. These are folks who are very far past treatment by and large. So the nice thing about NHIS, because it's a population-based survey, is you can actually derive population estimates, both for prevalence of conditions, but then also sort of number of cancer survivors in the U.S. who are impacted by these various conditions. So I just want to share a few of those from our work on the 2010 Cancer Survivorship Module, and we focused on the PROMISE Global 10 because, as we heard, we didn't have great data at a population level about about health-related quality of life. And so what we observed, and we focused on a classification of having a physical health component score or mental health component score less than one standard deviation below the mean. So these are folks who, by most measures, would be considered fairly impaired. And we observed that nearly a quarter, 24.5% of our cancer survivors had a physical component score more than a standard deviation below the mean, and this translates to a population of about 3.3 million U.S. cancer survivors. And approximately 10% had a mental health score, one or more standard deviations below the mean. Again, a population of about 1.4 million U.S. cancer survivors with impairments, clinically significant impairments in physical and mental health quality of life. And then we also looked at the combination of the two. So how many cancer survivors are impaired in both domains, report both physical impairments and mental health impairments. And that's a population of 7.2% of the U.S. cancer survivors, nearly a million of them, 973,000 is our estimate for how many people are impaired in both domains. So next I was going to talk a little bit about the geographic data that's available in NHIS, because I think that is another advantage of NHIS compared to perhaps some of the other methods that have been talked today. So there's very limited geographic data that is available in the public use data set because of concerns about confidentiality and identification of participants. So if you just look at the public health or the public use data set, really the only geographic data that's available is the four census-defined regions, which are the Northeast, the South, the Midwest, and the West. So you can do some rudimentary geographic analyses based on that. And I have seen those variables included many times, and you often do see geographic variation, not surprisingly. But there's a really rich source of geographic variables that are available by using the National Center for Health Statistics Research Data Center. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about how to do that, because I've used that in my own data to look at rural and urban disparities in cancer survivors. So there's all sorts of geographic available data, including state, county, tracts, blocks. You can look, the rural-urban codes are in that research data center. And then the data has also been geocoded, which allows for a wide source of linkages with geographic data. So how do you obtain the restricted use data? You need to submit a proposal, and they need to review it for the disclosure risk. And there's a process for accessing the data. You have to access it either on site at one of their places, or you can access it remotely, which is what my study team did. Fees do apply, so go online and look. It's not overly expensive. It's about $750 a month, so it's not unreasonable, but you do need a little bit of money. And they will merge additional data sources with the NHIS data. So say you want to include data about toxins or food deserts or whatever you're interested in. If it's linked by geocodes or blocks, they'll merge it into a data set for you. So I was going to talk just a little bit about how NHIS has been used. These are going to be kind of hard without slides, but we'll keep going with it. Beginning in the early 2000s, NHIS has been used actually many times. I counted in my unscientific counting of my Zotero database about 30 publications using cancer survivors and patient-reported outcomes data from NHIS. And they've looked at a variety of topics from disability, health status. Some people have looked at varying populations. There was a nice paper looking at childhood cancer survivors, another looking at survivors of multiple cancer diagnoses by Mike Andrakowski. And other individuals have looked at particular symptoms. Psychological distress using that Kessler K6 measure has been looked at quite a bit. Symptoms. And then Dr. Kent led a paper looking at self-reports of cancer-related financial problems, which I would include in the patient-reported outcomes. How big of an impact did cancer have on your financial health? And then also looking at implications for utilizing care in the future. And I'll just mention now a little bit of the research that I've done looking at geographic health disparities in rural and urban differences for cancer survivors. So why would we be interested in urban-rural differences? Well, we know that rural folks have worse cancer outcomes across the spectrum of cancer. They have lower rates of screening, increased likelihood of late-stage diagnosis, they're less likely to receive recommended treatments, and they have higher mortality from cancer. But we really didn't know anything about cancer survivors living in rural areas. And I sat down to write my very first grant after I came to Wake Forest School of Medicine, and I was looking for a population estimate of how many rural cancer survivors are there in the U.S. And there was no estimate. And so I said, all right, I got to write a different grant. And so I quick wrote a grant to analyze NHIS data to actually get at that population estimate of truly who are our rural cancer survivors, how many are there, and what does their health look like. So we published this data in 2013 in Cancer. And what we observed was that there are a large number of cancer survivors who live in rural areas, 2.8 million by our estimates from NHIS. That's about 20.8% of all the U.S. survivors live in rural areas. And that when we looked, they were really doing worse across a variety of domains. They were more likely to report being in fair or poor health. They were more likely to report clinically significant levels of mental distress, and they were more likely to report being unemployed due to their health. And as we've talked about comorbidities, also more likely to report multiple non-cancer comorbidities. So we drilled down on that a little bit more to try to understand, well, why is this? Why are rural cancer survivors in worse health? And so we looked at health behaviors, and what we observed was that rural survivors were more likely to be current smokers. Actually, 25.3% of all, at a population level, of our rural cancer survivors were smoking after their cancer diagnosis, compared to only about 16% of the general U.S. population. We're back on. And the other thing that stuck out to me was looking at the levels of physical inactivity. So nearly 60% of our rural cancer survivors were completely physically inactive, compared to only about 39%. And this actually, when I present this data, people are very surprised because they think rural living, healthy lifestyle. But this actually tracks with the overall data that we know about rural adults. And then we also briefly just looked at rates of foregoing care because of concerns about cost. And in fact, we found that rural survivors in general were more likely to say that they didn't get healthcare services that they needed because of concerns about cost. In our younger folks, this really seemed to be a factor of health insurance coverage because when we controlled for that, the disparities went away. But they were persistent in our older adults, which is somewhat paradoxical because these are folks who have very high rates of Medicare coverage. But again, there were financial barriers to accessing care. And I just want to acknowledge the NCI for supporting this research and my colleagues. So let me just finish up by talking about the advantages and maybe perhaps some of the limitations of using NHIS for patient-reported outcome monitoring. Well, the first is that this does leverage existing resources that are already being utilized, so it's a good use of resources, and it is representative of the U.S. population, which is important and distinguishes it from some of the other methods. The data is available across years, but again, not longitudinal at the level of the individual. And there are a tremendous number of comparison adults with and without other chronic conditions. And so you can compare adults with a history of cancer to other adults with no conditions, or you could compare them to adults with diabetes or with heart disease or whomever you wanted to compare them to, which I think has been pretty illuminating. And I would say that I think the individuals who have done that have shown that, well, in fact, chronic conditions have a lot more in common than they have distinguishing, that some of the deficits that we see in patient-reported outcomes really seem to be a function of chronic conditions generally. And that there is extensive geographic data available to look at geographic health disparities, but again, you have to access it through a restricted data use system. So it's a little bit cumbersome, but very rich. So what are some of the limitations of the NHIS approach? Well, we have very limited cancer-specific data in most years, so really no data available about treatment. It's not linked with SEER like some of the other approaches we've seen. We don't really know about cancer recurrence. We have time since diagnosis, but we don't, and we often use that as a proxy for proximity to treatment, but we don't really have good data in most years, but we did in the cancer in the 2010 about how recently they received treatment. The measures are general rather than cancer specific. We're obviously missing some key domains for certain types of cancer. For example, we don't have good data on sexual functioning, which would be relevant for prostate cancer and other gynecologic cancers. And you can't track longitudinal change. And I'll do a brief plug. If you're interested in this issue of geographic health equity, I'm part of a new CDC-funded network, which is working to address geographic health disparities in tobacco and cancer. And you can find out information about this new network at nohealthdisparities.org. And we're very interested in the issue of cancer survivorship and promoting geographic health equity. So thank you very much for your time and for going with me and staying here even without slides. Thank you.